I was talking with Harry Harrison before the convention actually opened, and we discovered, or thought we discovered, that we held more or less diametrically opposed points of view, and were charming to each other about how we were going to cut each other to ribbons when we gave our respective speeches. Harry didn't really say much that I disagreed with, and I have no idea whether what I will say will cause much disagreement with him, although I suspect it will. I promised Ethel, when I first agreed to give this talk, that I would be controversial. And it seemed to be the easiest way to be controversial would be to attack the guest of honor. On the other hand, I don't really feel like attacking the guest of honor, so that is a gambit which sort of went down the drain, and was the main point, I think, at which I would have risen Mr. Harrison's ire. What the title of this talk was supposed to have grown out of was my feeling that there is a new wave, in, particularly in British science fiction, which seems curiously unable to plot. And I think that the title actually rose out of something I said to Ethel about how various proponents of this, J.G. Ballard particularly among them, could not plot their way out of a paper bag. And Terry Carr picked up on this and said, that's great, you want to call your speech that. And he told Ethel that that's what my speech was going to be, whereupon it is. Basically, I think that there is a dichotomy which has been expressed over and over again at the convention between two opposed points of view, which have been summed up by the proponents of one side as the forward-looking, brave, new writers, as opposed to the reactionary, the ones among us who look only back towards the good old days of Papa Hugo. I regard this as slightly unfair, but I am forced to concede that in essence, it is perhaps true. A great deal of criticism has been thrown at the feet of those of us who are reactionary enough to be interested in good storytelling. This criticism is that here we are, science fiction writers, looking to the future, and yet, for some reason, curiously reluctant to enter into 20th century writing. Just before I came in here, I was out in the lounge talking with a group of people, and we were discussing 20th century writing. And one of us said, isn't it interesting that as modern science fiction was getting its start, so is James Joyce? And I said, yes. And where is James Joyce now? Has anybody else in the mainstream field been doing much about James Joyce? And the answer is, curiously little. And then we got to discussing various other offshoots of this. And we started talking about what is being talked about when we say mainstream and we contrast it with science fiction. Well, mainstream is a vast amorphous blob which includes anything which doesn't fit into a category. Mainstream is everything which is not genre fiction. The genre fiction is very easy to figure out back when they had pulp magazines, because if it was in a pulp magazine, it was probably genre fiction. This meant that it was pulp, and we could always speak in very castigating terms about pulp fiction, paid for a penny a word, ground out in a million words a year by its various practitioners, and obviously not worth a great deal more than the paper itself, which was good for using in the toilet. Strangely enough, some of the best writers at the midpoint of the century, in and out of the mainstream, had their origins in the pulp magazines. Perhaps not so strangely. This is where people got their start. This is where they learned their craft. Pretty many people have bemoaned the passing of the pulps, because today we have writers who do not know their craft, and they seem to be filling the pages of certain British science fiction magazines. I am very much annoyed and perturbed at a particular type of story, which I will call the story which starts nowhere and goes nowhere, but expresses the author's disinterest in, contempt for, or dislike for present-day society. We could, if we were going to be generous, call these dystopia stories and link them with 1984, which was perhaps much better written. Although I didn't really care for that book either. But that's a personal preference. When looking at these stories, we find that they generally consist of a rather unpleasant, vague personality who has no real awareness of life or living, trapped in some sort of paper bag society, which is getting wetter and wetter and wetter. And when it gets wet enough, the story ends. These stories rarely last much more than 5,000 words because you can't sustain them much longer than 5,000 words. I find them a total crushing bore to read, and I am only grateful that nobody is forcing me to, although there are those among us who are forced to read these for the thoughts towards anthologization. In the past, the magazine of fantasy and science fiction has been accused of fostering this type of story, but I don't think it's true. We have tended to foster the more, quote, literary, unquote, story in terms of better writing. We have never placed much of a halter on the type of story. We have published some real wowzers of adventures by Paul Anderson, which just incidentally happened to be quite well written. We published Phil Dick. We have published some experimental work, which we considered well written. But in general, we've not hewed to a specific line, which I hear prattled about increasingly these days. And that is that it's time for a new look in science fiction. The old values must be tossed out. To hell with good writing and storytelling. We're interested in something that explores the inner consciousness. I, for one, am not interested in what particular lint an author has in his navel. I am interested if he can make a good story out of this. I'm not terribly interested in what he chooses to base his story on, if he can tell a good story in the process. I am forcibly reminded, every time I hear J.G. Ballard's name mentioned here, of the fact that there is another writer in science fiction who is doing what he is doing notably better. And I have not heard his name mentioned by anyone but John Brunner, for which I was grateful. And that man's name is Philip K. Dick. Now, I suppose part of the reason is that his recent books have not been published over here. I don't know why. A couple of years ago, he wrote, or started writing again, after having left science fiction for a period of 2 or 3 years. He had been trying to write mainstream fiction in the meantime, with a notable lack of success, financial success at any rate. And he came back to science fiction, and he wrote 12 books. Probably around 6 or 7 of them are out now, more are still coming. If this man had spaced his books over a period of a year or so each, every one of them would have been nominated and possibly won a Hugo. As it is, only the first one did, and that was Man in High Castle. Philip K. Dick is systematically exploiting schizophrenia. And he is doing so in a way which questions the very basic nature of what is reality. He did this perhaps most overtly in a book called The Penultimate Truth, available in the United States as a Belmont book. He has written another book called The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, which will be available here from Penguin sometime soon, which goes so far into the question of reality that some people haven't been able to understand it at all. In this book, we lose track, really, of whether or not the protagonist is himself in someone else's hallucination or not. Now, in this, he is exploring inner space as surely as J.G. Ballard and his Jungian archetypes. I personally have been very much interested in Jungian psychology for the last 10 years or more. I can't say that I really think that Jungian psychology has any more to offer science fiction, however, than Freudian psychology, or that which has supplanted it, third stream health psychology, Maslow, Krogoff, and the others. I am amazed that someone who has self-consciously and deliberately begun exploiting Jungian archetypes, which is certainly not new, although the deliberate exploitation, maybe no, should suddenly be crowned for this reason as doing something daring and different. Particularly when he does so in what strikes me, subjectively at least, as a very intellectual exercise. I'm referring, of course, to The Drowned World, which I mentioned to Harry Harrison, this is just another goddamn catastrophe story, and I'm sick of them. And Harry said, you missed the whole point. It's not a catastrophe story at all. That's just a peg on which he hung all these beautiful Jungian blah, 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 blah. Well, okay, so he trotted out all these various Jungian archetypes. It didn't add up to a story. It didn't add up to much of anything but a new form of casebook pathology. We had a spate of this in mystery fiction about 20 years ago when suddenly people discovered that Raymond Chandler was taking his characters, I think more or less intuitively rather than deliberately, out of what you might call Freudian casebook. We had some pretty strange types. And for a while there in mystery fiction, all of our characters weren't good, clean, wholesome gangsters. They were dirty, perverted, old, ordinary people. All of them were trying to act out all their things that were wrong with them. I hate to think that science fiction is going to be in for this now, in one way or another. But I really don't mind if somehow the author can hang on this a good and convincing story. Now, it is very old hat to talk about story. John Campbell still talks about it, and I, for one, am very grateful. But over here, it seems to be that we're jettisoning all those corny old pulp things like having plots. This I can't see. Science fiction exists for a purpose which is separate from that of mainstream fiction, or it would not exist. Every type of genre fiction exists for a reason that someone wants it. When someone ceases to want it, it ceases to exist. Thus the death of air war stories. World War II killed them. Our romance pulps turned into nurse novels. Various other forms of genre fiction have withered and fallen to the wayside as people have lost interest in them. Of all the magazines still being published, only science fiction has survived with any strength whatsoever. The mystery magazines hang on, Manhunt and Ellery Queen and one or two others, largely because they are people with characters who have been in best-selling paperbacks. In fact, the paperback has supplanted the pulp magazine in many respects. But science fiction survives in a much more healthy form than any of these other genres. Now, obviously, there has to be a reason for this. And the reason seems to be very obvious and simple. There's something that people are getting here that they're not getting anywhere else. Now, I will agree with John Brunner that most of the elements in science fiction can be found in other forms of fiction. I can enjoy a good Western, one with a sense of sweep and history, in the same way I can enjoy a science fiction story set on an alien planet where people are pioneering, because anyone who has seen the American Southwest knows that there is a vast sense of wonder in that desolate and magic area, one which fascinates me every time I drive through it. Sometimes I wish I could just spend several months camping in it, and I may. Historicals, too, as John pointed out, have many of the elements in science fiction, but each of these other types of genres have only one or two elements of science fiction. Science fiction has a greater number in proportion, in combination. Now, what is it giving us? In its simplest opposition to mainstream fiction, it is giving us much more of the external world. In mainstream fiction, the world is totally familiar. We live in it. There are no real exotic areas left in the world now. As a result, nearly all mainstream fiction takes place on an internal level. It's forced to. There's anything else it can do. It truly is, in this respect, more limited. In science fiction, we can use the internal, but there's no reason we have to. We don't have to copy the mainstream. Now, I will digress here a moment to say that I am forced to the conclusion that the main reason that a number of those among us would like us to be like the mainstream is a very personal and selfish one. When a man writes and sells a mainstream book, he gets an advance of anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 to $25,000. When he writes a science fiction book, he gets $1,000 to $1,500. There's a big difference there. On the other hand, in the science fiction field, we can write a great many more books. So perhaps it doesn't balance out that badly to write a mainstream book of more than every 2 or 3 years and see it in print as an accomplishment. So you need the money. Still, there are those who would like to see science fiction destroyed as a category. Perhaps they think they could all sell their stories to Playboy. I doubt it. It would be, I think, a disservice to many of us who write too much science fiction to go into a mainstream market. But to get back to the point I was at a few moments ago, mainstream fiction is really rather limited. It's really the same old story told over and over again. John and his wife and the fellow down on the corner. And because mainstream fiction has become so limited, new techniques of telling the same story have to be found. This is the real reason why many modern mainstream writers have become as daring and experimental as they have. They're trying to find a new way to say something, because any writer is galled by the idea of saying the same thing that somebody else said in the same way. But it's not necessary in science fiction. It's not necessary because we are looking to the future. We're sort of fanning out. And we can look into so many futures in so many ways with such an incredible diversity. I think it's swell that we have a Brian Aldiss in science fiction. He's doing something nobody ever did before, and he's doing it rather well. I think it's swell we have a J.G. Ballard in science fiction, because again, he is doing something that no one else has ever done. Rather something I hope no one else will ever do, but it's necessary to see it done. It is not anywhere near so swell when people look to these two writers and say, "There, what's happening, baby, that's what I'll do." Because as much as imitation of any writer leads to saltification, imitation of these writers will. And it seems to be what's happening now. Now, I personally have antecedents which go back to pulp fiction. When I read for entertainment, and I read almost exclusively for entertainment, I want a rousing good story first. I don't care what genre it's in. I don't think that science fiction has ever produced a writer the caliber of Raymond Chandler in the mystery field. We've probably produced better writers than most of the Western writers. We're probably on an equal level with them. We really don't have very many good craftsmen in the science fiction field. People who are not only solid storytellers, but good writers. One of the few to come out of the 50s was Douglas Fodry's. And he hasn't written anything recently, except book reviews. I'm glad to see those at any rate. But it seems to me that we are beginning to lose track of what it is we're all about. And that is that first, we have to capture our reader and involve him and make him interested in what we're telling him. And I don't think we can do this by becoming obscure. I don't think we can do this by telling him that he has a duty to ferret out our message. We are not James Joyce's, and we are not trying to do what James Joyce did. And there's no reason we should. There's no reason we need to feel so inferior. That the only way we can salvage our self-respect is to copy another field or an artist in another field who has not even been copied in that field. I would like to see much more return to the very basic concept of telling a solid story. Over here, perhaps the only contemporary writer who is doing it with any regularity is John Brunner. And I think it no coincidence that he, like Eric Frank Russell before him, and Ted Tubb, and James White and others, was solidly grounded in American science fiction. Because American science fiction grew out of the pulp magazines. This doesn't mean it's mired in the pulps. It does mean it has roots in the pulps, and these roots cannot be hacked off without running away to life and blood. On the other hand, those writers who are unfamiliar with the bulk of American science fiction and its antecedents have come out of the mainstream here in Britain, have taken a very different approach to writing, and have seen science fiction, I think, more as a vehicle or something they could have done outside of the science fiction field. And there's a great deal less that is intrinsically science fiction in their work. To the extent that they've brought something new to science fiction, they've enriched it. To the extent that they've taken something away from science fiction, they've depleted it. Now, my personal philosophy as a writer, and what I am personally looking for as a, both a reader and an editor, is what I once summed up as a romantic plot realistically handled. I use the word romantic, of course, in the traditional 19th century way in which Hugo Gernsback splashed across the cover of his magazine, Science Romances, and there was no love interest at all. I'm thinking of the fact that these plots are flamboyant and adventurous and could never happen in the real world. Because if they did happen, you wouldn't find one bit of fun. But at the same time, we can't expect people to write Tom Swift and the Rubber Boys with such antiquated handling and language. We demand these days a sort of hard-boiled ashcan form of realism in the approach to the details. Again, I was telling one writer who submitted a rather promising story to FNSF, you've made this into the future by putting glittering chrome on everything. The future will have no more glittering chrome on it than the present does, because we're living in somebody's future right now. The future will probably be filled by the useless gadgets, electrified, cracking plastic, tarnished stainless steel. The chrome will all peeled off with salt corrosion underneath. But nonetheless, while we place this patina of reality upon our plot, we're telling stories. We're going all the way back to what Homer did for the Odyssey, the Iliad. We're telling something to enthrall people, to hold their fascination, to make them for a moment transcend the moment in which they live. I don't think there's anything terribly noble or uplifting in this. But the storyteller is always at a place in society all the way back into antiquity. And that happens to be our place. And it is an honorable place. It is not one that we should feel ashamed of. Now, I personally am a rather beginning writer, and I am here toying off my superiors, which places me in a pretty strange position, because now they can go out and buy my book and pan the hell out of it. And they'll be right, for the most part, because I don't know my craft as well as they know theirs. But I have my eyes fixed on this rather simple vision of telling a story which I would enjoy reading were I to read it in someone else's book. And I expect to learn my craft increasingly over the years. Last night, a fan asked me, what do you want to accomplish? What do you want to do? Haven't you any great message? No. I have no message whatsoever. I don't care to tell you about how I think you should all go out there and lick the race problem and ban the bomb and so forth and so on. This is reality. You're living with that every day. If you can't cope with it in reality, I can't do anything for you. It's pretty naive. Pardon me, I picked up a cold. It's pretty naive to assume that we in science fiction wield any real effect over our readers. To give you a concrete example, Robert Heinlein, for the last two or three books, has been peddling message pretty hard. Those who agree with him are applauding him. Those who disagree with him are raking him over the coals. Has he accomplished anything? Well, he's created a good bit of controversy. His books are staying in the forefront of public discussion. But I don't think he swayed anybody to his side. And I don't think that, in the end, his message has reached anybody who didn't already have it. Now, I have also been accused of being a proponent of adventure fiction from the very narrow-minded point of view. In fact, Harry Harrison said to me in a wave of dismissal, "Oh, you just like adventure fiction." Therefore, I am not competent, from his point of view, to say anything about Ballard, etc. But adventure is the broadest concept we have. I can read a book by J.R.R. Tolkien and feel the vast spread, sweep, and scope of adventure and be thrilled to the marrow by it. Or I can read a very hard, cold, scientific, realistic problem story in analog. There haven't been as many as I'd like to see in recent years, in which a man is trying to solve a scientific problem and never leaves his laboratory throughout the duration of the story. And there's adventure there, too. And this is what I think of when I think of an adventure story. A story in which something happens, but not necessarily on the action star planning level. Rather, a story in which something happens which makes me feel that I have partaken vicariously in an adventure of the mind, an adventure of the body, an adventure of the emotions. Something which, for a moment, has injected a note of broad adventure into my life. This is what I conceive storytelling to be all about. And I would remind you, in conclusion, that we are storytellers in science fiction. We are not preachers. We are storytellers. We are not navel pickers. We are storytellers. We are not psychotherapists. Thank you. I would point out to you, however, as I cautioned at the beginning of my speech, I intended to be controversial, and I have perhaps overstated my case on several occasions. Are there more questions? Yes.
I agree with you. I'm sick to death of stories with no beginning, no end, and no middle, and no characterization. And the sooner we get back to storytelling, the better I shall end.
If I
can go to a church. I don't go to church.
Yes.
May I say that the corollary of this last remark is that you don't have to read the science fiction which has a message.
I don't.
Well, that's fine, then you needn't. But what I would like to say is the reason that I've continued to be attracted by science fiction, having sort of read pulp magazines off the stands, is that within the genre, you can find such an immense scope. You can read your adventure fiction, Paul Anderson. And then you can go and you can read J.G. Ballard, and it gives you something different. And yet at the same time, it has that something which I would hesitate to define, and wouldn't like to define it from my position, the something that sets it apart and makes it science fiction as opposed to what we call the mainstream. And I think you can, everywhere you look in science fiction, you find something different. I mean, Judith Merrill will write a story, and it will be completely different from something that Frederick Pohl has written. And I think that this is a big appeal of science fiction, that there is such a wide disparity of views being aired within the field, and really there's something for everybody. I think it's very foolish of people to go around knocking the people who are providing the alternative to their particular method.
I would agree with you, that's not a question. I think I pointed out, I have no objection to one J.G. Ballard or one of anybody. What I have an objection to is a school being formed around a particular author which tends to swamp out other forms, other viewpoints. George, you have something?
The argument that the mainstream writer can get $25,000, the beginning mainstream writer, the unknown mainstream writer, almost any writer in science fiction would be treated as an unknown in mainstream. Wouldn't he be getting an advance way down the possibility of very little sales at all? Right.
Well, as a matter of fact, yes. I understand that G.P. Puffins paid Terry Southern and Mason Hoffenberg $1,000 for Candy. Yes.
Ed, I would like to hear you defend a little bit more what I think is your ridiculous assumption that mainstream has to turn inward because there are no more physical frontiers to explore. When I look back at the major novels of the 19th century, for instance, I cannot think of a one which depends upon exterior exploration of some physical unknown place. And yet during the 19th century, you will agree, there were still many areas of the earth that were unexplored. The novelist, except of course for Conan Doyle and a few such secondary figures, consistently ignored them to devote themselves to human problems as they always have done.
Well, you are much better read in fiction in general, Jim, than I am, and I would find it difficult to debate you. However, I think that we must remember that mainstream has also included such people as H. Rider Haggard and others who have dealt with exotic places of one sort or another, and that, if I'm not wrong, Conrad, among others, dealt with exotic places. As I say, I'm not really in a position to debate you, except to point out that the mainstream does not include merely the forefront of experimental writing and thought, but that entire amorphous blob, as I said, which is generally non-classifiable and has included people like Harold Robbins, Evan Hunter, and a lot of people who write PAP that gets on the bestseller list. I don't guess I've satisfied your question, but... Yes?
I think there's another essential distinction between mainstream and science fiction, and that is an attitude of mind, actually. Like the attitude of the mainstream writer is that the world will, in general, at least for the length of the story, stay as it is. That includes both technological things, which are accelerating, which will change the world probably several times beyond recognition in our lifetime, the way things are going now. It also means the scientific view of the world, which has certainly changed, like, when we think back to the times, like, where the Earth was believed flat, like, to take an extreme example, to the new discoveries that are now being made about both the universe and the microcosm, splitting even of atomic particles, which is now the forefront of physics. All this is not really taken into account in mainstream fiction. Like, you take the world as something unchanging, essentially. On this, exactly this point where science fiction differs, it operates from the premise that the world is changing. Like, it makes it sort of, if it's a good novel, it makes it part of its plot that it is changing. It takes this fact into account fully and goes on from there. And I think that's one essential difference.
Good point.
I think you mentioned a writer who tried to write mainstream and failed, and I've heard other such examples. How do you account for the fact that they are successful in science fiction and unsuccessful in the mainstream if it's not because they have this gimmick which they utilize instead of more of their
own? Well, now the case I cited is Philip K. Dick, and I'm not truly sure because I've never read any of his mainstream attempts. However, he told me about one. He has been experimenting with a form of Japanese writing, which I am so unfamiliar with that I've forgotten the name, which is a multiple viewpoint type story, which is vaguely cyclical in nature, in which the threads tend to be tied together at the end, which was most obvious in the story like Man in the High Castle. Now, I said the protagonist, if there was one, in one of his mainstream books, when he told me about, is a tread recutter, which is one of the most obscure professions you could think of. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
Yeah.
And many used car lots, when they get in cars which have tires on them which are bald, they cut new tread down into the threads of the tire, which is a very unsafe thing to do, thus giving the purchaser the impression that he has tread on a car. They cut these grooves into the bald tire. It's a very unsafe and pernicious sort of thing to do. And he had taken his protagonist and made him a tire or tread regroover and gone on from there. And I have no idea what he went on from there with. I have no idea whether Phil's peculiar bent, which, as I say, was a systematic exploitation of the schizophrenic approach to the world, whether he could do this successfully outside of science fiction, since he had such a science fictional turn of mind that perhaps he could only approach it in science fiction images, which might have turned off the editors he submitted these books to. But I really don't know what he was doing or how successful it was. There was a case of a science fiction author, Richard McKenna, who sold a mainstream book, The Sand Pebbles, which did very well for him, and it was a very great tragedy that he died rather recently before doing anything more, really. It's a very individual thing now, whether a writer can succeed in the mainstream or what he will succeed at the mainstream. We must remember that Evan Hunter started out as a science fiction writer, too. Yes?
I wanted to classify writers as science fiction writers, real writers, or mainstream writers. They're just writers.
I would classify them more simply as whether or not they're storytellers or not. And of course, many mainstream writers are storytellers too. I use the classification because it's much handier to use classifications when you're talking about things, because then other people know what you mean more easily. It's a form of shorthand. It can be limiting unless you both accept the limitations. Yes?
Yes, I think pointed out the limitations of the mainstream writers. There are two types of mainstream novels making it now. That's the obscure type, the ones you have to study. It's beautifully written, but there's nothing there.
On the surface, at any rate.
At any rate. You have to really search for it. It's work. There's another type. They point up all the problems of present-day society, and you read these books and you suffer along with the people in the books. On the other hand, there are times, and there are many people, who don't want to suffer. and they don't want to work. They want to relax and enjoy because they've suffered and worked all day long.
Yes, I can read the newspaper if they want more of that sort of thing. Yes.
It could be argued, although I would be the last person to argue, that there is no such thing as science fiction per se, and no such thing as mainstream writing, and that your entire premise on which you have based both your discussion and your questions and answers which have followed is false for this reason, that within so-called mainstream writing, there are writers whose entire purpose it is to entertain, that is to pass the time when somebody is coming home tired from work, within not only the mystery genre, the western genre, the science fiction, any classification you care to name, there are writers who are engaged in sociological or psychological problems, the inner or the outer world, in all of these fields, even the western, and that science fiction may differ from every other form of literature in only one point, and that is its perspective, i.e., either another place which is unavailable to a writer in any other part of fiction, for example, another planet, or another time, also unavailable to a writer of any kind of fiction other than historical, or a combination.
I think you've made a very cogent point there. It is probably true that the broadest definition of science fiction is a story which takes place in the future or some place we don't know about yet. And it is probably also the best definition of mainstream is a story which takes place in the world as we know it here and now. Yes?
Is it not as fair to say that there is no such thing as mainstream because the bulk of writing has specialized in science fiction but in other specialities? The Western has been suggested, the detective, the love story writer, the films, women's magazines, all of those are just as specialized as the science fictionist, and they merely have their particular gimmick, if that's the right word. The very small proportion of the best of writings, which I think ideally has a contact with everything, is the only thing we truly call mainstream. And I think there's very little left when you've taken out all the specialization.
Well, no, I would have never linked mysteries, westerns, love stories with mainstream per se, but again, as I said before, these are handy, convenient labels which are used in the publishing industry for easy reference. There are some of them very ambiguous, and we've hit on a number of the ambiguities here. Mainstream is the most ambiguous of all because it's a title which excludes classification, whereas the other titles, Western, mystery, science fiction, conjures up a much more positive image. Yes.
If the mainstream, if you want to pay attention to it, you could divide them into drug addict novels, nurse novels, and sex novels, and this and that and the other thing, and you have a little bit left.
But aren't you really defining other genres? Like, I would consider the nurse novel just another genre, not the mainstream at all. I think of mainstream, I actually think of two basic levels of writing. Popular bestsellers, and the people who are at the forefront of experimental writing, or even those who aren't at the forefront of experimental writing, but are still doing a lot. Well, in the bestseller field, we have the Harold Robbinses and the Evan Hunters and so forth, their ilk, who are, by the way, not bad storytellers when they set their minds to it, particularly Harold Robbins. And in the experimental field, of course, we have, I don't know if it's true to say experimental or not, the new black humorists, Mayer and the others, and we have somewhere in between the two people like Norman Mailer. The people of whom one would say he's a novelist rather than he writes science fiction or he writes historicals or he writes blah, 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 blah. And again, these are all categories, and we can argue about the categories, and we can present good points on either side of the fence. In the end, we come down to what is the most common usage, and that is, you know, the way the publishers and the reviewers, etc., actually classify these books when they talk about them, because after all, we have to work with these people. Yes.
You mentioned before that you think one of the reasons why the SF authors are asking for more recognition is so they can have more money. What I'm suggesting is that the corollary you added to that throws this whole thing into a different perspective. You said that it takes 2 or 3 years to write a good mainstream novel. I contend that it takes 2 or 3 years to write a good science fiction novel.
I say that you can't sell more than one or two, one in 2 or 3 years. You have a very limited market. Everybody wants to write a mainstream novel. Everybody is trying to get one published. I think that if you had a man of Norman Mailer's, say, general talents and abilities, who was capable of grinding out a novel every month, that he couldn't sell 11 out of the 12, for lack of markets, unless he found both, for one thing, publishers would be opposed to overexposure. He'd have to use pseudonyms to start out with. And another, there's entirely too many other people who are there with stuff to be published too. It's a more restricted market, really, than science fiction. We gripe today about the lack of market for science fiction, but today we have a number of paper book publishers putting out originals. We still have the magazines, more magazines than any other genre has. And of course, there is practically no magazine market for mainstream fiction these days. Very, very limited. You have to have a big name. On the other hand, getting to the second part of what you said about how long it takes to write a book, this is very much an individual matter. We've all heard of people who can write books over the weekend or something similar. We can look back to L. Ron Hubbard's Fear, which was written in one fell swoop on an electric typewriter, bang, 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 no revision, which is a remarkable piece of psychological, it's not really even fantasy so much as it's just a psychological story, which is stands up very well, whether or not you look at it from the point of view of having been written on a weekend, or whether you look at the point of view of maybe it took a year. I think this is very much more a matter of what an individual author is capable of. I know that I can't revise my stuff more than a limited amount because I've done as best I can do with it the first couple of times around. Beyond that, I'm dead with it. Now, there are others who write only cursorily in their first drafts and run them through a number of successive drafts, polishing and so forth before they arrive at what they want. This is too subjective, both in and out of this specific science fiction field. I can think of fans who polish their works for fanzines. Sometimes with very good results. Yes, Joey.
Following part of this line, generally you go right on through. Will you find one or two scenes that you have to go and fight with later on to work out, or will all of it lay down easily?
Well, you're asking me as a specific writer, yes. And I have my specific approach, which is if I get a bad scene, I have to stop and wrestle with it then and there before I can get any further. I have to believe in what I'm writing. I was writing a particular book in which I thought it was necessary to preserve certain information for a sort of punchline at the end. But there came an inevitable place in the plot where the hero simply had to ask someone who knew for this information. And I thought, well, if he asks this person, then either this person equivocates, for which there's no good motivation, or tells him, which blows the punchline. So I won't have him ask. So I wrote another, I don't know, 6 or 8 pages, and got disgusted with the whole thing, threw it down, walked out of the house, wandered around for half an afternoon, came back and said, okay, this can't be a punchline. This has to come in here now. Oh, I can't believe it, otherwise I can't take it any further. So I went back and rewrote the scene. I didn't find out about it, simply changed the orientation. And, you might say this is a case of the characters writing the book. There has to be a certain amount of interior logic. But with me, any difficult scene has to be ironed out before I go any further. Yes?
You said at the beginning of your talk that the reason for science fiction's existence was that there was a market for it. I think that also gives the reason for the label science fiction. The label is there so that the reader can find the type of story he likes. Now lately, the Ballard Group has come along and are using not the methods of science fiction, but simply the plots that previous science fiction writers have already manufactured for them, particularly the disaster story.
Let me modify that. They've used the labels. I don't even think they've used too much of the plots.
Well, the idea of a worldwide disaster,
which was originally developed by science fiction, and which they have a perfect right to take and use as one of the tools they apply to their essentially mainstream novels. But if they don't want the label science fiction, and if we don't want them to label it science fiction in order that we don't have to plow through it looking for the adventure story that we like, why can't they go their way and we go ours?
George?
A minor point, but I'm under the impression that the Lord God Jehovah wrote the book about Noah without any reference to science fiction. The catastrophe story is not unique to us.
No. Well, we know a great deal to the Bible in one way or another. I've seen so many of our stories and titles. Are there any more questions? Someone in the back of the room?
Yeah. Another appendix to that. His statement that science fiction developed a worldwide disaster is absolute nonsense, as even though he had ever written, for example, Journal of the Plague Year, which could hardly be called a science fiction novel. That certainly antecedes almost anything that could conceivably be called by anyone science fiction.
My point wasn't that science fiction developed the disaster story. Of course it didn't, but...
Worldwide
disaster. But in that case, there's absolutely no excuse for the disaster story, simply because it comes by a giant plague introduced in the course of a war, or because it comes about during an atomic attack. It has no reason to be related to science fiction at all. And the same with the use of other science fiction devices, such as the dying out of the human race, or the, or even the man in orbit, the spaceship, the landing on another planet even. None of these are more than a use of an idea developed by another man and applied not for the purpose of the idea, but for the purpose of some philosophy that the writer wants to get across, or some technique that he wants to use, and therefore has no real place in a field that's devoted to new ideas and new landscapes and new methods.
I think you're defeating your point there, because surely, if nothing else, J.G. Ballard's given us some new ideas.
New techniques of writing, but not new plots.
Well, there are very few plots. Someone once said we had something like seven basic plots, but someone else once said we had four basic plots. It's enough.